In the 14th chapter of the book of Genesis, beginning at verse 17. And the king of Sodom went out to meet Abraham after his return from the defeat of Chedorlaomer and of the kings that were with him at the valley of Sheba, which is the king's dale. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, and he was the priest of the Most High God. And he blessed him and said, Blessed be Abram of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thine enemies into thy hand. And he gave him tithes of all. That is Genesis 14, 17 through 20. This is our introduction in the Bible to Melchizedek. That was in the story of Abraham. If you go start in the first part of the 14th chapter, you'll find that Lot, Abraham's nephew, was living in the area of Sodom and Gomorrah, and he was taken captive by these kings. And so Abraham armed his household servants, and they went out and they defeated the kings. And he rescued Lot. And it was common in warfare then was to take spoils. In other words, if you went out and you defeated the enemy and they had lots of wonderful garments and horses and weapons and all different things, you just plundered them and they were yours. And so Abraham took the spoils, but being a rich man, he would not take them to himself. He just said, I don't need these things. And so he just kind of dispersed them among the people. But above all, he gave a tenth of the spoils to Melchizedek. And it's, to me, it's really interesting that in my childhood, in Pomona Church in California, we had three ministers, and two of them were relation of mine. One was my great uncle, J.E. Adamson, Uncle Jack, we all called him, and he would be my mother's mother's brother. And then we had my mother's younger brother, Norman McLeod, who was our other minister. They took turns preaching every other Sunday. And if there was a fifth Sunday, there was a man in the congregation, George Lichty, who would speak on it when it came to fifth Sundays. But the thing that I'm getting at here is Uncle Jack, all the time, and it seemed like in almost every sermon, he seemed to talk about Melchizedek, Jesus being a priest after the order of Melchizedek. And I thought it was very strange that they would talk about this man. He would talk about this man all the time. But as I've gone on in life, I've realized that it was extremely important. And that's why Uncle Jack talked about it all the time. In fact, in the book of Hebrews, as we've been studying this, and we've been leading up to this fact that he is the priest after the order of Melchizedek. And the most important part of all of it is that Jesus is not an Aaronic priest, that is a follower of Aaron, the brother of Moses, who was the head of the priesthood in the Old Testament, but he is a priest like Melchizedek. And we're going to talk about some of those things because we're going to see the difference between the priest in the order of Aaron and the priest after the order of Melchizedek and how much more important and how greater the Melchizedek priesthood is than the Aaronic priesthood. In the book of Hebrews, this is mentioned several times. The fifth chapter, the first 10 verses are all dealing with priesthood, the high priest. And the 10th verse, it says, called of God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. That's all he said there. called of God, a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. Well, then in the 6th chapter, and there at the 20th verse, he says, we were talking last week about the two immutable things, the oath and the promise, that are so sure about the Abrahamic covenant. Well, the 20th verse says, whither the forerunner is for us entered, even Jesus, made a high priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Well, one of the things that we learn in studying the Bible, and especially in the original tongues, is there were no chapter and verse divisions. It just went on continuously. Men have added the chapter and verse divisions because we couldn't say, well, you couldn't tell where people to find something. If you couldn't say Hebrews 6:20, what would you tell people? How could they find what you're talking about? So as a result, by having the chapters and verses, we can find things easier. So as a result, in the original Greek, Hebrews would have gone straight on from one chapter to the other without any verse and chapter divisions. So when he said, whither the forerunner is for us entered, even Jesus, made a high priest forever after the order of Melchizedek, he would have gone right on, for this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham returning from the defeat of the kings and blessed him, to whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all, first being by interpretation king of righteousness, after that also king of Salem, which is king of peace, without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like unto the Son of God, abideth a priest continually. I've had so many questions. In fact, recently when the Monroes were up, they asked a question about Melchizedek and what it meant to be without a father and without a mother and so forth. Well, we'll get into that, but the whole idea came from Genesis 14. From Melchizedek. But it is actually mentioned in the Psalms, number 110, this idea of the priest after the order of Melchizedek is mentioned. 110:4. Yahweh hath sworn and will not repent, thou art a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. It starts out and said, Yahweh said unto my Lord, so this is definitely referring to Jesus, sit thou on my right hand. Then he goes on and say, Yahweh hath sworn, will not change his mind, you are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. So everybody in Israel knew about the order of the priesthood under Aaron, but this was something different, to be after the order of Melchizedek. So this is where the idea came from, would be Psalm 110:4, and then that would take you back to Genesis 14:17-20, which we read. Years ago when I was studying this, I was using a book called Barclay, and he was showing how the Jews had different ways of interpreting the Bible. One was literal, in other words, whatever it says, that's what it is. One was suggested meaning. Another means the meaning arrived at after long and careful investigation. And the fourth one is allegorical or inner meaning. And this was most important to the Jews, was the inner meaning. In fact, this allowed them to take things out of context and just use them. In fact, you probably don't remember it, but in the first chapter where he was trying to show that Jesus was better, he used all kinds of texts. Some of them are very difficult. For instance, one, the 8th verse, but unto the Son he saith, thy throne, O God, is forever and ever. Well, some people think that he's calling Jesus God. But when you go back and study this in the Psalms, it has nothing to do with that. And so this Hebrew Jewish writer, Paul, is using this last form of interpretation and just taking verses out of context and just piling them up as a sort of proof of his position. There's another form of interpretation that is also very interesting, and that is to interpret by silence. As it doesn't say anything about this, so let's talk about it. In other words, when it gets over here to say without father, without mother, well, it doesn't mention anything in Genesis 14 about Melchizedek's father or mother. So Paul's going to use that as an example to show that Jesus didn't have a father and a mother to put him in the priesthood. And this is this interpretation by silence. And that can be dangerous to interpret by silence, because you can come up with some really wild ideas. But here it was important because there are some things that are not told about Melchizedek that are emphasized as being important. Okay, it says he was king of Salem. Seemed to indicate from Psalm 76 about God's tabernacle being in Salem, that this is an early name of Jerusalem. In fact, a lot of people say that Jerusalem should be Jebusalem, because it was a Jebusite fortress before David took it. But we believe that Melchizedek was the king of Jerusalem. But besides being a king, he was also a priest of the Most High God. The Hebrew there is El Elyon. And this is where he met Abraham returning from the defeat of the kings. The diglot says defeat instead of slaughter. Slaughter sounds so bad. And in the Old Testament, it is actually the Hebrew word defeat. Regardless of whether they killed him or not, they defeated him. But this Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, Abraham gave a tenth part of all. He is by interpretation king of righteousness, after that also king of Salem, which is king of peace. So I think this is beautiful in this whole idea of types and antitypes, that Melchizedek would be a type of Jesus as a king of peace and a priest as well. But the third verse is the one that bothers people. It says, without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life. Well, in our economy of our civilization, you couldn't, I wouldn't be here without a father and mother. Melchizedek wouldn't either. But what you soon then learn, it goes to the next phrase, is without descent. One version says without pedigree. The diglot says without genealogy. And I've never felt very wild about genealogies. The Bible's full of genealogies. 5th chapter of Genesis, 10th chapter of Genesis. Book of Numbers, page after page after page of genealogies. But I think it is interesting to know about our forebears. In fact, I was going through my papers the other day, and I ran across my maternal great-grandfather in the Texas census in 1880. And talked about my grandmother, Emma, and her sisters, Beulah and Jesse. But anyway, I found out where they were born. And it was interesting to know. But when it came to priesthood, you could not be in the priesthood and under the Mosaic law without having an unbroken pedigree, just like an animal. You had to have been able to go through there and say, just like the genealogy of Jesus in Matthew. Jesus Christ, son of David, son of Abraham. Abraham begat Isaac. Isaac begat Jacob. Jacob begat Judas and his brethren. Judah begat Phares and Zerah of Tamar. Phares begat Ezram. Ezram begat Aram, and so forth. He had to be able to show just one after the other all the way through the generations. In fact, when you go down here, it says that from Abraham to David was 14. From David to the carrying away and the Babylon was 14, and unto Christ was another 14. I'm in the process of giving my little great granddaughter Emma a picture of her great 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 grandmother, Emma Farrell. She didn't know she was being named after a great-grandmother, but she is. So I'm going to give her a picture of her and tell her about she's six generations away from the Emma, my great-grandmother. But in the priesthood, you couldn't be a priest if you didn't have a genealogy or a pedigree. Melchizedek did not have a father and mother to put him in the priesthood. Jesus didn't have a priestly father and mother to put him in the priesthood, and yet he is a king and a priest after the order of Melchizedek. He's made that of God, not by birth. So, he had, in other words, it didn't mean he didn't have a father and mother, but he didn't have a pedigree. He didn't have a father and mother in the priesthood that would put him in there. In the next description, neither beginning of days nor end of life. Now that just doesn't happen in humankind. Melchizedek had a beginning and he had an ending, but evidently not in the priesthood, because when you dig into Numbers, the fourth chapter, verses 2 and 3, and then again at 46 and 47, that we learn that the priests under Aaron back in the Mosaic period, they did not begin serving till they were 30, and they had to retire at age 50. This is what it says, the descendants of Kohath. These are the descendants of Aaron. Take the sum of the sons of Kohath from among the sons of Levi. This was the priestly tribe after their families by the house of their fathers. From 30 years old upward even unto 50 years old that enter into the work of the tabernacle. According to Mosaic law, I should have retired at age 50. Here I'm still going. Probably should have. I wouldn't have lost my mind like I have. But anyway, that's as long as they could serve. The beginning of their priestly days was age 30. The end of their priestly life was age 50. But Melchizedek, because he was not of the Aaronic order, was not controlled by that. In fact, I think there's even significance in the fact that Jesus came to be baptized at the age of 30. Because back in those days, the priests entered the service of the tabernacle at age 30. And so when he was age 30, he came to be baptized of John the Baptist. So really, there's no mystery when you start digging into this. To say that Melchizedek didn't have a father and mother means he just didn't have one in the priesthood to give him a priestly genealogy. To say he didn't have beginning of days or end of life just meant that he was not controlled by the Aaronic priesthood to enter at age 30 and quit at age 50. But the only thing about it that makes this interesting is that because he was not confined to those 20 years of service, he abides the priest continually. He could keep on serving. So that's being used in reference to Jesus, that he's not like those priests that died and had to be replaced by another priest. He just goes on and lives on as a priest continually, and that's a benefit, because all of us know that as far as earthly rulers are concerned, we have good ones and bad ones, and sometimes you have a good president or mayor or governor, and the next one may not be good. And so you're suffering in between time. But when you've got a perfect high priest like Jesus, he just lives on and on and on. And it doesn't change. He isn't like having a mean priest one time and a good priest another time. He is a good one all the time. So in the sixth verse, another one, he whose descent is not counted from them received tithes of Abraham. That's explaining again, without father, without mother. So this is, and then you get down to the 14th verse, and this is another. This is being referred to Jesus. It's evident that our Lord sprang out of Judah, of which tribe Moses spake nothing concerning priesthood. Jesus didn't have any right to priesthood. He had right to kingship, but not to priesthood. So here, just as Melchizedek was made a priest of God So Jesus is made a priest of God after the order of Melchizedek. It's a wonderful type and antitype. One thing that prefigures or gives us a lesson about another. The Melchizedek priesthood was superior to the Aaronic because even Abraham gave tithes to Melchizedek, and Melchizedek blessed Abraham and said, "The less is blessed of the better." When you're digging in this seventh chapter of Hebrews, you see why there had to be a priest after the Melchizedek order, because the Aaronic priesthood was inadequate. The 11th verse, "If therefore perfection were by the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law, what further need was there that another priest should arise after the order of Melchizedek and not be called after the order of Aaron?" It was inadequate. It wasn't good enough. So that's why he had came on with another Melchizedek priest. The 15th through the 19th verses is showing that the Melchizedek priesthood is an eternal priesthood. It went on forever. It is evident that after the similitude of Melchizedek, there ariseth another priest. And so, in other words, in the case of Melchizedek, they didn't need another one. So in the case of Jesus, we don't need another one. The new Melchizedek priesthood was made by oath. 20th and 21st verse, "Inasmuch as not without an oath, he was made a priest. For those priests were made without an oath, but this is by an oath of God that swore and would not repent. You are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek." So you see that he was better and was made by an oath of God. Another thing that's brought out in the 27th verse, the old priests had to go daily and offer up a sacrifice first for their own sins and then for the people's sins. Well, Jesus didn't have sin. So this Melchizedek priest didn't have to offer up an offering for his own sins. So that's superior, because the old priest had sin and therefore had to make an offering for it. So, in other words, he did not have to repeat sacrifices, which they did under the Aaronic or Mosaic priesthood. They had to continually make them. And that's one thing Paul is going to bring out later in the book of Hebrews. Those offerings never could make anybody perfect. They were just reminders. It carried over, just like the Day of Atonement. Sins were not erased on the Day of Atonement. They were just carried over from the past year to the next year. So, the Melchizedek priesthood of Christ is very important. In summing this up, Jesus is a high priest, not by genealogy, but by the oath of God. Jesus, as high priest, lives forever. Jesus, as high priest, is sinless, without making an offering for himself. Jesus, as the high priest, offered himself as the perfect sacrifice once and forever. So you see how much better. In fact, that takes us back to our introduction to the whole book of Hebrews. Jesus Christ is better. He's trying to win his Jewish friends to acknowledge Jesus as being superior. We don't have a priestly system as such. I'm not a priest, but Jesus is a high priest only in the sense that he is our access to God. In other words, we come to God by him, and that's extremely important. He is a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. Thank you for your time.